Beginning of the season tonight, Wine and Gold in Toronto to take on the Raptors. And we welcome in the Smart Choice Windows and More studio, Nick Barlett, CEO of Rock Entertainment, as well as your Cleveland Cavaliers, who, understandably, usually, if anybody's like, they're a few minutes late coming into studio, I'm like, all right. And then you ran into East Ninth, which Lyman and I know about East Ninth. They're doing, what are they doing over there?
They dug up the road.
So it was like the Dukes
of Hazzard.
Looks like
they're putting in a minefield over there.
At 4:45 this morning, I was like, what is this going on? I go, Jesus.
It's almost like they waited for the Guardian season to end, and they're like, let's get to work. And they're like, oh, yeah, but the Cavs start pretty soon, too. See, it's not much of a buffer.
You said down to like two lanes or one lane over there?
Two lanes, yeah. I'm usually a massive fan of construction because it's a sign of progress. But I'm hoping we have some progress by Friday night, you know?
Oh, gosh, yeah. You guys take it on Detroit on Friday night. Big season. You know, this is the 30th season of Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse already. You blink and you're 30 seasons in, Nick. What are you excited about this year?
Yeah, I mean, to be downtown for 30 years now is pretty fantastic when you think about it. But to your point, it does blink. And when you look at and study the history of the building and all the great memories and moments that have been through the walls of Gund Arena and then Quicken Loans Arena and now Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, it's pretty incredible, you know, and it's something that we take a lot of pride in, and we look forward to celebrating 30 years of being downtown in a big way between now and next fall.
Have you ever heard our show before, Nick? We do something called power ranking, and we like to power rank different things, and you've been here long enough where between all the LeBron years, between all the events that maybe you've been able to sneak into and what, could you power rank your top three events at that facility? We have music.
Wow. put me on the spot. I would say put the five NBA finals runs as one event.
Okay, that's fair.
Put the Republican National Convention, no matter what your political affiliation is, as the second event.
Just I got to meet Mike Huckabee.
Yeah. Down for downtown. And for number three, you know, I got to go with...
I met Roger Stone, by the way.
I got to go with the two NBA finals, because when you think about it, it was the 50th anniversary of the NBA, and then it was the 75th anniversary of the NBA. And the last one probably was the greatest collection of basketball players on a percentage basis of the top 75 players in the history of the game that you'll ever see together again, just because of life, right? And so
Michael Jordan came from the racetrack, right? He found a way. We were like, is he even going to show up? This would be incomplete without him.
That's right.
And he even showed up to Cleveland.
We got to go with five, because then right after that, I put the women's final four from this last year, which was absolutely incredible. And then the Rock Hall inductions. I mean, to have that at the Fieldhouse in 2 years, you know, from the last two times, they're iconic performances. So I maybe added a couple there. But
that's fine. We normally limit it to three,
because it's hard to think up off the fly, but you got five. You're doing fantastic.
I got a couple more, but I'll leave it at that.
Oh, okay.
Keep the list going.
We get into the overtime.
Because I had Stipe, UFC, was the loudest. I will contend that's the loudest I've ever heard that place. The amount of alcohol consumed by all of those wannabe UFC fighters that were in attendance.
We got to find the guy with the mustache. Remember the dude the mustache?
Yeah, one of his coaches.
Totally different story. We're way off topic there.
I get it.
But needless to say, there have been a lot of great events that you can champion.
Unbelievable when you look back over a period of time. Open with Billy Joel and Eric Clapton back-to-back nights, October 17th and 18th in 1994. And from there, the hits have just been rolling.
Yeah, does it hold up, because you get to travel around and see everything? And obviously, you guys, you renovated, you remodeled. I think it still looks fantastic. And anybody that knows, you know, we talk about still that venue, how it holds up. You get to travel all over the place. I mean, you'd say it does, right?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely one of the top 10 arenas in the country. I think it's one of the top 20 arenas in the world. And look, we invest significantly in that building every year on top of what our public partners have invested alongside with us. And so for us, it's a place that we want to call home, and we will call home for a long time. And we think it's really important to be in the core of the city.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's a 30-year-old building. And even before the upkeep on it, even before the renovations, it didn't feel like a 30-year-old building. But it's obviously a very nice place. Again, you guys start off on Friday against the Pistons at home. That's at home. I mean, you guys start off tonight. I don't. do I get basketball opinions out of you, Nick? Do I try to?
Hey, look, I would tell you this. We are, you know, the vibes around the team are so great right now. They really are. You know, I mean, to have a superstar like Donovan Mitchell that cares about the community, cares about fans, cares about giving back, you know, for him to be your leader and then to see the progression of Evan so far in preseason and to see Darius back on it, added a little bit of muscle to that frame this year. And then J.A., who's just a stalwart of consistency, we're really excited.
Wait a second, Donovan is still here? I thought everybody nationally said he was gone for sure. He's still here? He's still on the Cavs?
They made it out to be, because what month was it? Was it February? I'm like, he's staying.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people like, I was getting calls from people out of town like, you really want to put it out there like that? You're going to embarrass yourself this way? Nick, I'm not kidding you. I'm like, yeah, he's going to stay. He'll be fine.
It was unbelievable, the narratives that were curated out there about him not wanting to be here, him coming and going. And, you know, I give him so much credit, him and his mother and his sister. They're such great people. But, you know, they said when we left Paris, he said that's really when he had made his decision at the end of January, early February, that he was planning to stick around. And so for us to – and we didn't know that, by the way, officially. We didn't know it until, you know, pretty much everybody else did this past summer. But I give a lot of credit to Kobe Altman, our president of basketball operations, Mike Ganzi, our general manager, and then Coach Atkinson. You know, he's one of those guys that this community is going to be able to align with so well. This guy works his tail off and I think is going to deploy a whole new level of Cavaliers basketball that will really excite our fans for years to come.
You know, you said earlier, talking to Nick Barlish, you said earlier that construction, generally when you see construction, you're like, that's a good thing. It's a good thing for the economy.
100%.
It's a good thing. Well, there's about to be a lot of construction on the riverfront as part of a $3-plus billion development plan, and chief among it is going to be, what is it, the
Cleveland Clinic Global Peak Performance.
Yeah, so it's a lot of words. It's a mouthful. But what does it really mean for not only the Cavs, but for people in Northeast Ohio? Because when people see that price tag and they see that comprehensive type of a plan, they always want to know, well, am I going to be included in that? What is this all about?
Yeah, so one, it's going to be an iconic building that really fits and folds into that riverfront in such a special way. But the whole purpose of that, and this is our chairman, Dan Gilbert, his vision is, how can we activate that real estate? How can we bring people down? And so, you know, a portion of that facility is going to be dedicated to sports medicine and healthcare for the public at the end of the day. And that will be really the first unlock for us in bringing people back to that portion of the riverfront that, unless you've parked a car down there or unless you've, you know, traversed down there for certain reasons to cut through, there's been no reason to go down there for anything else other than that. And so it's really going to breathe a lot of vibrancy and life into that area of downtown. And the goal is to continue that along the rest of the riverfront. And, you know, we really have a vision and a plan to double down on these great American cities, and we think it starts with that Global Peak Performance Center on the riverfront.
Nick Barlage joining us on the show. Now, game two at home on Wednesday, the Lakers are coming to town. Anything you can tell us that you might have planned for? Because I remember when Bronny was a toddler, and I'm watching like in college, and he came running out onto the floor after a Cavs win. I don't know if you remember this, Tone, where Michael Regei was doing the play-by-play and everything. And I remember Reg is going, yeah, that's the little guy right there. And like LeBron picked him up, and now they're playing together. Is there anything at all that you can tell us about any plans next Wednesday?
You know, one, we're going to get through opening night. We've got a lot of surprises on opening night. We've got a little show that it'll take over the skyline after everyone leaves around 9:50 on opening night. And by a little show, I mean it's better than a fireworks show. I'll leave it at that.
So it's like, and Sacramento Kings and their beam is going to be
the first thing I thought of.
This is better than that. And it's special for opening night. And then, yes, you're right. On October 30th, the Lakers come to town. It's also one of our key 30th anniversary theme nights, so we'll have a lot of great memories and moments woven throughout the evening that night. And look, it's going to be a special night for Northeast Ohio. You know, LeBron was obviously born here. Bronny was born here as well. And so, but to be clear, it's going to be about Cavaliers basketball, and it's going to be about this new era that we're ushering in. And it's going to be about how we continue to build and grow as a franchise and as a team in a way that these fans can be proud of what they see.
Speaking of a new era, we are in a new era of consuming our sports. Every day I get asked the latest on the Cavaliers. People are seeing the news in other cities, maybe this year and beyond. Can you give us any kind of an update on how people are going to be able to consume the Cavaliers on TV?
Yeah, so it's going to be similar to the previous years. You know, we are on FanDuel Sports Network now, which used to be Bally's. We've got another year of that. We're in the midst of a 4-year agreement. This is the fourth year of that, and so we're excited about what's on the forefront. You know, this past summer we founded Rock Entertainment Sports Network, which is going to carry the Monsters and the Charge this year, as well as a plethora of high school sporting events. We actually already had 54 games on Rock Entertainment Sports Network up to today, and so that's something we're very excited about because we think the community deserves and needs more hyper-local sports coverage, similar to what you guys do, but obviously on the television side. And so there's a lot for us to continue to build into and think about in that space, but it's going to be fairly status quo for this upcoming season.
So you will be simulcasting our radio show at some point for content, is what you're saying?
Hey, look, if there's something to be had out there, we're open for business.
Get cookie pie on it, Kenny.
You get me all excited about these things.
You mentioned Dan Gilbert earlier, and we did see a little more of him last year. Obviously, we're very sensitive to his recovery and everything that he has been through. Are we going to see even more of Dan Gilbert going forward?
Yeah, look, Dan, he was actually there on Saturday night at the Rock Hall inductions. He will be there for opening night as well. Dan's energy is incredible. His mind is off the charts in regards to just how he thinks about things. And as Kobe and I like to say, he's really our cheat code. You know, he provides us with resources and a vision that is unparalleled in professional sports. You know, for a guy that prompts us and pushes us to reinvest every dollar we generate either into the team you see on the court or the ice, the fan experience at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, or the community here in Northeast Ohio, we can't take that for granted enough. That is a very rare outlook on the business, and we have such an opportunity this year, and I do think you'll see Dan more and more as he continues to focus on all the great things we have going on.
So, I mean, it starts with the team, but I mean, you mentioned Monsters, you mentioned Charge. How much do they factor in to what you guys do? Because you try to fill the arena, it seems, every night.
That's right.
So how much do they factor in with some of the other things that you've been doing here with the Cavaliers? How do they mix in?
Yeah, I mean, look, they are complementary. You know, I look at them in a few different facets. One, on the Monster side, obviously the Columbus Blue Jackets AAA affiliate, right? So it's great to have that connectivity in the state of Ohio. Two is, they put almost 11,000 fans in that building every single night last year, and I think we'll beat that attendance mark. We've led the AHL in attendance 3 of the last 4 years.
How is that?
We've got a great group of people that are so passionate about selling that, building fan affinity. And believe it or not, Northeast Ohio is one of the top 5 youth hockey markets in the country as far as participation
goes. No kidding.
People don't understand that, and so hockey is a very vibrant, strong sport here in Northeast Ohio. And then when you look at the Charge, obviously playing at Public Auditorium this year, which is an iconic building, we're beyond excited about that because it gives our basketball side a whole nother developmental aspect and added dimensionality that to have them right down the street, they practice together, they share the same culture, they share the same strategy, the same X's and O's, and so it makes transitions. Like, look at Sam Merrill, for instance. Sam transitioned very seamlessly from the Charge to the Cavs. You think about Imani Bates as he makes his recovery. There's so many of these players that getting to play is so valuable for the growth and the development of their career, and that's what we have with the Charge right in our backyard.
Feels like we have room for one more basketball team.
Go ahead, Nat. You want me to ask?
Well, we just had the WNBA just wrapped up their season. I don't hear Cleveland. We were one of the founding members of the league. Let's go. What do
we
have to do?
Can we beat that drum? What do we got to do?
Yeah, look, we are massive fans of the WNBA's success and their growth. I think you will see from us in the near future some interest in what that could be here in Northeast Ohio. We aren't ready to confirm that interest yet, but we are absolutely looking at it, and we think there's great opportunity in women's sports in general, and we've thought that for a long time, and we really think that there's a lot for us to continue to dig into there.
Nick, we thank you very much for the time. Outstanding stuff as always. Best of luck this season for all three of the teams and all the events that are going on over at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. We can't wait to get going.
Nick Barledge joining us. He is CEO of Rocket Entertainment, as well as with your Cleveland Cavaliers and the Smart Choice Windows and More Studios. I don't think Jameis is saving the season. You think he's saving any jobs over there? Think about that for just a second. I'm going to take over 48 wins for the Cavs, and I do think that the regular season matters so deeply.
48 and a half.
Oh, excuse me, you're right. I'll take 49 wins for the Cavs, and I think the regular season just matters so much. And I'm not just saying this because, well, it's like we do sports talk and we got to have people trying to, you know, be interested in the Cavs every day and the dead ass a winner. There'll be plenty of draft to talk about. Don't you worry, guys. It's not just that. It's that, it's like, we got to figure out whether or not this is the long-term thing. Because I would imagine, as things go, they've been together for a while, so they should start out okay. But they got to figure out whether or not this is the group they want for a home stretch. And if there's going to be something as far as an option available, maybe there will be a team that's willing to liquidate an asset coming up in February. And so if they're willing to liquidate an asset, if they're willing to get you your wing, if they're willing to take on X player X, are you willing to make that move? Well, that's something that they got to figure out halfway through the season, with Mike Gansey and with Kobe Altman. So it is a very serious regular season. Now, that said, yeah, it does seem to be the defending champion Boston Celtics, and it's only been one game with them, but I can't imagine them doing a huge backslide with the defending champion Boston Celtics. It would seem to be that they are the head and shoulders leader in the clubhouse, that they would be the one. So our competition level, and this doesn't set things up well, but our competition level is Knicks, Bucks, Philly. I know Philly had a disappointing year, but they made a big move. Like, those are the ones that I think we think of. Is Orlando and Indiana in that mix right now? Are they in our class? Orlando took us to seven. Good young basketball team. They made a couple of moves.
And they expect to continue getting better with their young core.
Yes. So are they in our weight class right now? Because I think there's Boston. I think there's maybe up to four or five teams, maybe even in the same class before it all averages out. And then there's the rest of the Eastern Conference. I think that there is a big a traffic jam with us, New York, Milwaukee, Philadelphia. And then Orlando's still young, Indiana's still young. One of those teams is bound to have a backslide. But I think that would be where it is. So, and we got to figure out whether or not that we want to, or we are one of the teams that are willing to make a big move halfway through the season. But I don't think that they're going to play to a level. Like, we've had years in the past where the Cavaliers were 500 at Christmas time. Like when LeBron first came back, and we knew it was going to take a minute to gel. But when a team was 500 at Christmas time, it's like, man, we got to make some moves. We got to get going here. We got to get this thing going in the right direction. And they bring in Amon Shumpert. They bring in J.R. Smith. They do some moves like that. I don't think it's going to be that way. I think you could be several games above 500 and be just fine by the time the trade deadline, or by Christmas time comes around, and we might not be thinking about trades. It's just, how do we match up with Boston and everybody else at the top of the Eastern Conference? Could Jameis Winston save some jobs?
I think so. I absolutely think so, because in most cases, the way this starts to unfold is everybody gets bounced in a season like this. But if Jameis Winston all of a sudden has the offense not only looking competent, but they're actually able to win games, which is not going to be easy. They're going to be underdogs in most of their games the rest of the way. Will they be favorite? Will they be a favorite in any game the rest of the year, do you think? But if Jameis actually has that offense looking kind of like Joe Flacco did last year, then yeah, I think that makes Kevin Stefanski look Saints a whole lot better than he looks today.
Saints are away. What if Jameis plays really well in the offense and they win on Sunday? What about the Chargers? Could that be the Chargers?
I think that might be the one. Just
like
looking,
a 1 point? I'm not saying.
Looking at the outset. Yeah.
I know that becomes a pick'em, but the and number's maybe, the number.
Maybe the Dolphins, depending on what happens with That's them good. For the rest of the year.
It's a good pull.
Okay, so yeah, That's they're not. It. Yeah, they're not favored for the rest of the year. But if Jameis shows what he has, like, is that enough to do anything? Because we asked that question earlier, and I had several people, and they made good points. It's like, well, he might be a good play caller. Is he a good leader of men? Is Kevin the right guy to be the head coach? Like, yeah, it's now that you've lost the quarterback, and I know last year was last year, does that save anything for anybody for the future? I don't know if it does. And if they're a package deal, then we just have to have this conversation of whether or not these are the right men to lead the team in the future. And I'll always try. It's not to be holier than thou. It's not to be sanctimonious. It's just the truth. I get uncomfortable calling for jobs. I've never done it on the, at least on this station. I've never done it. I might have done it when I was back in the old days of the old place, way back when I was a kid. I don't think I could call for jobs just because, one, I wouldn't want that to happen to me. Two, I think it's the lowest common denominator. Once I call for it, like, in all seriousness, and I've let Pony have it several times on the air, once you call for a job, how do you go back? When I say this is it, Mike Tomlin needs to be fired, and I say that on the air over and over, if I'm Pony, where do I go back on that? Like, it's the same. When I say LeBron's the best, I got to be ready to say LeBron's the best. But it also goes to, am I willing to defend you? Like, right now, where's my defense of Andrew Berry? Do I ask it again? Because I'm not getting an answer. Where's my defense of Andrew Berry?
I thought you were asking rhetorically.
No, I'm looking for one. I'm looking for a legitimate defense.
I mean, at this point, his drafts have not been good enough.
And I don't want to make any trades. I don't want to make any trades for players to bring in. Like Mary Kay said, they could be buyers. I'm thinking, buyers of what? What are we buying? Are we going to Streetsboro Flea? What are we buying? Are they buying office furniture?
Yeah, I mean,
what are the Browns buying?
Buying makes, see, this is where...
I'll ask her that tomorrow at 8:20.
This is where a lot of our conversations are going to be complicated now, because the only way you're buying is if you think you can have the roster next year ready to compete again, and that anybody you'd be buying is going to help you next year. The problem with that is you might have a chance to be a top five pick this year.
Exactly.
Well, so why would you punt in a season where our fans have given up? Let's be honest. Our fans are getting into it with the players. Like, yeah, that's when a season goes off the rails.
Well, Rodney's...
What magic do you think you're recapturing down the stretch that you were able to harness last year? And this year, it's too late. You're already basically, I'm not saying mathematically eliminated, but for the way we talk about the Browns, their postseason hopes are out the window.
Guys,
right?
They had to go 11-6 last year. They're 1-6 this year. You can't tell me you're going
to
be perfect. I mean,
you'd have to go 10-0,
but you have to be about 10-0. So that's almost impossible to do, guys.
In a bunch of games, you're going to be underdogs.
Yeah, in a bunch of games, you're going to be underdogs. So I'm just trying to see what it is. So there's going to be an argument now of whether or not people even want that to happen.
Like,
or
if Jameis starts winning games over the next few weeks, but DTR is healthy again, aren't you going to DTR? Logically,
I have veterans on that team. Do I still have my veterans, or have I traded people?
You're going to trade more. Za'Darius Smith's gone. They're trading him for sure.
He's a one-year guy, right?
Okay, but
have they won all their games up to that point?
I'm saying, how long does it take DTR to get healthy?
You are giving me the biggest homework assignment.
I mean, we don't
know
about him right now. We should find something out today. Kevin will talk today, and we should hear something. They never say anything before Wednesday future injuries.
Well, you know what he's making us do, Owen. Like, and this isn't even for a show thing. Like, I got to get out the depth chart, and now I got to sit there and look about, all right, because you mentioned Za'Darius Smith. All right, well, I can let go of Za'Darius Smith and still say that next year, not that I claim it personally, but you could say, well, if Jameis does well, we could be a competitive team. Because then we still have X, Y, and Z, and then I got to go down this depth chart and go, all right, who am I keeping, who am I letting go? And it seems that this would be a sinking ship. So it would be a tear down and a build back up, because of the cap hits and because I don't intend to be a very competitive team. It could be fool's gold. Do I even want these guys here? Like, that's a decision I have to make, and probably within the next 2 weeks, because the trade line's what, on the 5th?
Yeah, it's
busy day
after
on the 5th.
The Chargers game.
So it's after the Chargers game. So it'll be Tuesday around 4 o'clock is where that trade deadline is, on Election Day of all days. And so now I got to figure out who's staying, who's going, who could be a part of my core for the future. Is like DeJuan Jones, that. So I'm just saying words into the void or names into the void. Then I have to decide, is it worth it to tear it down? If it is worth it to tear it down, then I'm basically admitting to people that maybe we might go back to 2017, 18, or 16, 17 land, which is a terrible thing to do. Nobody wants to do that. That means, is it even worth it to keep the head coach? Is it worth it to keep the general manager? Do I trust that general manager to build this team through the draft? The evidence right now would say I can't trust the general manager to build the team through the draft. Or say we win some games this year. Say you end up with a number 9 overall pick. Can I take quarterback X out of the draft, put him there, or do I take good player X out of the draft because you keep telling me how bad of a draft class it is, and a lot of people do as well, that it might not be a great draft class. Do I take quarterback X or take player X, have him be a piece to help out maybe Jameis, maybe bringing him back? Best laid plans, right? So I can take him and go through this next year and then see where that goes. I mean, do you understand how painstaking this sounds already?
None of it's easy. None of it's great. But
it isn't a road. It is a labyrinth right now that I have to try to navigate. And I think a lot of fans don't know where to begin other than we're 1-6 and they just want all this to end. But they got 10 more games to get this thing figured out.
Yeah, I just think that if Jameis can look like remember, you had a historically bad quarterback situation.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not trying to unearth all the arguments about a second half against Baltimore. Deshaun Watson's numbers now, it was a growing number of games, growing evidence that he was one of the worst quarterbacks in modern-day NFL history with the Browns. Well, I don't know what happened to him. Obviously, that was not the guy the 13 teams at least chased after. He was a different player here in Cleveland. He didn't perform well. Anything would have been elevated over the play that you were seeing from him. Anything would be better than what we saw. And if Jameis can have the offense looking good again, then that's going to be a huge feather in the cap of an embattled coach right now. And I don't know, you could say that could maybe save Andrew Berry too. I'm looking at more from the coach perspective, because right now people are acting, and I'm one of them, like this coach can't coach anymore. And I know that's ridiculous. I know that he can coach, but what he's done this year has not looked like a competent NFL head coach. Maybe Jameis Winston unlocks that again.
Mitch, please.
So we got this audio from the Quick Snap podcast hosted by David Andrews and Brian Hoyer. Now, the former Browns quarterback is reunited with his former under center mate Joe Thomas the other day. Joe Thomas gave his perspective on the Deshaun Watson fans cheering the injury situation at the stadium on Sunday and likened it to another Browns quarterback.
As a player in the locker room, you sort of treat the players in the locker room based on how they treat you and how they come to work every day. Mm-hmm. Once they get in the locker room, they leave their baggage at the door. And so I think for those guys to see the guy that they've gone through training camps with, they go through, you know, the grind of a season with, they see the way he's working and trying to do everything he can to be the best quarterback that he can for the team, and he gets hurt, and all those players can put themselves in that position on the field, a guy that's maybe not living up to his contract, that the fans are not happy with at all, but he's in a very weak moment in his own career. And so the empathy that they have for him in that situation is great. And then to hear the fans that are supposed to be on your side cheering when that person doesn't know what his football career is moving forward, I think it's really hard to be in that situation as a player. It happened to me once in my career. Derek Anderson got hurt in a game. I think it was my second season. He had not been playing very well. The fans wanted to see Brady Quinn. He gets hurt. They cheer him. They start chanting Brady. And it's just such an uncomfortable feel for an athlete to have one of your teammates, no matter what the off the field situation is with him, to feel that the fans that are supposed to be on your side basically cheering or booing for one of your guys because of an injury.
Thoughts?
Well, it does not surprise me that the amount of athletes in all sports that have gone after those fans in Cleveland that were doing that. I know it sounded like they were going after all the fans. I don't know. They didn't have the names of the fans who were doing it. So it was just a tough spot all the way around. It doesn't surprise me. Yeah, teammates stick up for each other, and colleagues, coworkers, people that have been in that walk of life, they all understand that. And so they're all, it does not surprise me at all. Ronnie McLeod was in here yesterday, and people got really mad at him for voicing what I believe that all of the fans, if they played professional sports, would be saying the exact same thing, right? Would they not?
I was proud of Ronnie. He didn't back down to me.
No.
And I just couldn't. It's awkward. I knew it was going to be awkward.
You were doing the right thing. You reminded him.
I feel the way I feel,
you
and I'm not going to back down.
You're like, you know it wasn't everybody. And he's like, I know it wasn't everybody, but we don't have the people who did it. We don't know the people who did it, so we were just very annoyed by that set of circumstances.
Yeah. I respected Rodney's opinion. I still respect Rodney's opinion, obviously. But there's a lot of people who are going, you know, we support you through thick and thin. And when they hear it from players, like, that's why, like, man, I'm ready to start the new week. I'm ready to start and just move forward. I don't I don't think they're going to win on Sunday. I don't think I can pick them all year. I'm ready to move forward because I don't like it when the fans and the players get into it. Because we're never going to have a moment where we're all just going to shake hands and it's going to be kumbaya. It's not going to go that way. Fans were here before them. They'll be here after them. And they are very mobile people, players are, and they can go on. And I think a lot of fans have decided that you are, with the exception of a few, you are a vessel for my entertainment. And there are a few people that mean more. Nick Chubb means more. Joe, who just spoke, means more. Miles means more. That's why I went back and I said, guys, you have to understand the human customer element to this as well, and the fan element. Like, I know I got ripped by you. I got ripped on the midday in the afternoon for saying I would ask Miles if he would consider a trade before I would trade him. Yeah, I have to do that because it is still what's best for the franchise long term. It's what's best for the business long term, because as we've seen already, if you make a trade of a person who's a very popular person and then with what you get in return doesn't work out, they're going to hold it against you for a very long period of time, as we are seeing right now. So yeah, you kind of got to run it by the fans and run it by Miles first and the players you do. So there's that goes with it. But people can disagree with me all they want. And I know, Ken, it was the majority of the state. I was there. I know what I saw. And if you disagree or say I'm covering for fans, whatever. Yeah, I'm defensive of Cleveland fans. I'm defensive of Cleveland fans. I'm not going to say shame on all the fans. There were some goofballs who were yelling. I can't defend those people and I won't. But for the majority of Browns fans, the 99.9% of Browns fans, no, they weren't all excited to see that all go down. Or at least they weren't going to go and show their ass in front of everybody and start whooping and hooting and hollering. That's what I know. So those people are going to continue to go there, and they'll continue to support, and they don't need to hear it. They don't need to be talked down to.
Well, we talked about it. Well, but the ones that did it need to be talked down to, right? The ones that did it.
But they're not going to. But it's exactly what you said. They're not going to go find them and sit them down in a room and tell them that.
So what do you think the athletes should have done that were really upset about it afterwards? Because clearly they were genuinely upset about what they did,
and we give our opinion on it, and we all move on. What happened is what happened, and honestly, I don't know of any other healthy way to go about what happened. Frankly, I don't. I don't. They went out there. They looked listless again.
I think a lot.
They looked bad again. They lost again in a game they could have won if they had any sort of offensive output whatsoever.
What you're saying is interesting because we talked a little about this on the podcast because I wanted to get to the root of it. Like, what were you booing? Were you booing the team was bad? Were you booing the guys off the field transgressions? I got mixed reactions on that because some people were like, well, if the Browns were winning, they wouldn't have booed him. Okay, so it's not about his off-the-field stuff. It's just that he was a losing quarterback. Well, that's not good either. If you're just booing, we booed Tim Couch. Are we just going to boo guys that get injured when their teams aren't good? Because that doesn't speak highly of the fans that did that.
Yeah, it doesn't speak highly of them, but it happens in Cleveland and it happens everywhere. By the way, Mary Kay has reported here. Deshaun Watson will have his ruptured Achilles tendon repaired Friday by Packers team physician Dr. Robert Anderson, source tells her. She writes, should be about a 9-month recovery. You know what that means?
Well, Aaron Rodgers did it in 77 days.
You know what that means, though, if it's a 9-month recovery.
What's that? Sounds like he's ready for West Virginia.
You said it, not me. Was he ever truly ready for West Virginia?
I don't think any of them were truly ready. I don't think the coaches. I don't think Andrew Berry. Paul. Where was Paul in all of this?
No, let's not even start
that. Paulie D.
Barely get him to Cleveland. You think we're going to get him to West by God?
It also means there's
going
to be a lot of Achilles surgery babies born.
Get out of here.
Come on.